I remember a Tennessee field with hay as far as I could see, and a tall man standing in it, staring at me with pale blue eyes. Eyes that you wanted to look away from. Daunting eyes. My father had eyes that gave me the feeling he could order up any kind of weather he wanted just by looking at the sky. If the tobacco crop needed rain, he'd glare upward until I swore it got cloudy. I gestured at the hayfield and said, "Daddy, how long do I have to stay out here?" He said, "You'll be finished when it's done, and it's not done till it's done right." I remember a leaning gray barn with an iron basketball rim mounted in the hayloft. At night after the chores, after it was done and done right, my three older brothers and I climbed to the loft for ball games in which they offered no quarter, just elbows and fists, and the advice, "Don't you cry, girl, I better not see you cry." I remember learning to hit back, hard enough to send them through the gallery door into a 10-foot drop to the bales below. I remember the supper table crammed with bodies, children with clattering forks fighting over the last piece of chicken, and my mild, selfless mother filling the glasses and plates with a closed-lipped smile and a voice soft as a house dress. And then I remember watching her muscle a 2-ton truck into gear and roar off to pick up farm supplies. I remember the searing smell of the ammonia that my college coach waved under my nose, and heavy polyester uniforms with crooked numerals, and the dark hotbox auxiliary gyms with no air conditioning where they stuck women, one in particular leaking light from holes in the roof through which birds flapped and splattered their droppings on the floor. I remember being young and wild with energy, conducting searches for amber liquid refreshments, pulling into joints that sold 20-cent beer. "What's your brand?" "Cold." I remember standing on a metal podium in the 1976 Montreal Olympics, imbued with a sense that if you won enough basketball games, there was no such thing as poor, or backward, or country, or female, or inferior. I remember every player, every single one, who wore the Tennessee orange, a shade that our rivals hate, a bold, aggravating color that you can usually find on a roadside crew, or in a correctional institution, as my friend Wendy Larry jokes. But to us, the color is a flag of pride, because it identifies us as Lady Vols, and therefore as women of an unmistakable type, fighters. I remember how many of them fought for a better life for themselves. I just met them halfway. I remember the faces on the young women who ran suicide drills, flame-lunged and set-jawed, while I drove them on with a stare that burned up the ground between them and me. I remember the sound of my own voice shouting, "Hose claw, sprint through the line! Urgent, determined. Snow, you're stronger than you think. You don't ever let other people tell you who you are." Exasperated, mocking, baiting. "Holly Warlick, just get out of the drill. Just get out. Put someone in who can throw a pass." Holly Warlick remembers, "When you see Pat's heartbeat in her neck, you're in trouble. Big trouble. You don't want to look in her eyes, so you try to look someplace else. And then you find her neck, and you see her heartbeat in her neck. Also, you see her teeth gritting. That's not real cool either." I remember being able to almost read their thoughts. "That lady is crazy. Why is she torturing us?" They embellish. "I can't ever satisfy her. What does she want from me?" "Only everything." "Man, I'm getting a bus ticket and going back to New York, or Indiana, or Oregon, or cold country Kentucky." "Yeah, I would recommend playing for Pat Summit," Abby Conklin liked to say, "if a year of counseling comes with it." Bless their hearts. I remember chewing the inside of my lower lip over losses until I had a permanent, entrenched scar. I remember asking my friends and family two questions after every NCAA championship game. "Do you think I was too hard on them?" "What did Daddy say?" I remember being so possessed by the job that I coached in my sleep. I'd toss and kick until I woke myself up hollering, "Get down the floor!" I remember standing on the sideline and stamping my high heels on the hardwood so furiously it sounded like gunshots, and whacking my hands on the scorer's table until I flattened the gold championship rings on my fingers. I remember jabbing a finger into an official's face and backing him from mid-court to the baseline. I remember the sound of certainty in my own voice, lifted over the roar of 20,000 people and two rivalrous marching bands in a sold-out arena at the NCAA Final Four, as I told our players that though they trailed by 11 points with 7 minutes to go, the game was ours. "We're not leaving here without a championship," I shouted hoarsely, "so y'all just go on out there and get it." I remember how intensely in the moment I felt in big games. I remember the second-by-second adjustments, the dialing up of players' emotions in the huddles, operating on pure feel, calling plays less by rational process than by some buried sense of rhythm, that now is the time for a change of pace. I remember the speed of the decision-making, who needs the ball, who needs to be in the game, and how I loved that, loved it.